Professor of Health Economics at the University of York and joins us from the University this evening. Good evening.
Good evening, Ellie.
It's a big question, isn't it? What needs to be done about the pressure that our hospitals are under? Is it investment or is it more money on health and social care in particular?
Well, the worrying thing is it's a whole host of problems that have all come together to create the current problem. We run at very high levels of capacity in the NHS, higher levels than in other countries. And when you run at very high levels of capacity, if you get more people coming in for A&E than you can accommodate, given the capacity levels, then you get these sorts of problems backing up. And that means that there's just no slack in the system to find a bed for people who need it. So it's difficult then to move people on from A&E into the hospital. If there's no places in the community for people to be discharged home or to nursing homes, then people get left in hospitals when they should be discharged. And with no capacity in the system, there's no flexibility to accommodate for peaks in demand in the system. And the question then is, why do we have no capacity and what can we do about it in the future?
So why do we have no capacity?
Well, that's driven by a whole host of reasons. So people are suggesting it might be because it's difficult to get GP appointments, see GPs out of hours or get appointments during the day when they want, so instead they're turning to A&E. People are, there have been eligibility restrictions and access to social care has been tightened up, so if people aren't getting the adequate social care they need, what do? They go to the A&E department. Perhaps people are, instead of going to minor injuries units or walk-in centres, they're going directly to A&E. Or the new 111 service, which used to be NHS Direct, perhaps is not acting as the alternative source of point of contact that it used to.
But if some people, if they call 111, and I can speak for personal experience here because I did have to call 111, and I know a friend of mine had to call 111, and both of us ended up in the A&E department.
It's
a difficult one, is it? Because you can call that 111 number and they can say to you, actually, you need to go to A&E.
Indeed, and that's a very legitimate response to take. If people are in need and are judged to be in need, once you've made that telephone call, then we ought to be moving people along to the appropriate place where they receive care. The really worrying thing here is that usually there's excess demand on A&E departments and A&E facilities generally in the winter, because people need to use the healthcare system more in the winter. But we haven't had a particularly bad winter yet. There hasn't been a big flu epidemic, which might have happened in previous years.
There's a lot of pneumonia about, though.
There is, but it's not massively different from normal levels, or there hasn't been a big spike in demand related to the weather or big outbreaks of flu. If that happened, which it might happen next year, the pressures on the A&E departments will be even greater. So this is exceptional, but it's not really exceptional. And what we need to do is ensure that we learn from the crisis this year to ensure that it doesn't happen when demand really becomes much greater. And it may well be the case that that happens later on this year or next winter. So we need to make sure that the alternatives to A&E are really working properly, that there is sufficient capacity within the A&E departments, and that they've got the right numbers of staff and the right mix of staff, and that hospitals themselves are able to ensure that they have beds available for people who are coming into A&E who then need to be moved into the hospital.
So is it money and extra staff, or is it money, extra staff and training?
And better planning generally. I think we need to review what's happened this year across the board, see how much is due to funding shortfalls, how much is due to staffing shortfalls, how much is due to the failure of the system to work together from one setting to another, and put appropriate plans in place to ensure that the system works much more effectively next year.
Is nursing too academic? There's a lot of people saying that nobody can get into nursing these days because you've got to go and do a degree, and that actually is a bit ridiculous.
I think that what we need to be planning for is the right number of nurses in the right who have the right specialism to ensure that nursing staff are, we have enough nursing staff and we have them working in the right places.
So they can't recruit at the moment. That's what you keep hearing. We can't recruit.
So we need to ensure that we are training the right numbers of people in this country to ensure that posts that need to be filled are filled. And this does take time to plan, because it takes a while to train nurses. So we actually need to think what our training programs is for doctors and for nurses, and ensure that we're letting the right numbers of people into nursing schools and medical schools, so that we actually are recruiting and training the right numbers of people to serve the needs of the population next year and down over the next few years. And if we haven't really planned numbers correctly right from training, then we're going to have this problem every year.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about this evening. There's an awful lot of issues there. Thank you so much for finding the time to talk to us. It's a fascinating subject. That's Andrew Street there, who's Professor of Health Economics at the University of York. If you've got any thoughts on